Welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. Thank you. What a joy it is bringing a new guest to you each week with important information for health and well-being, and it's the fulfillment of a prayer I recite daily, if not more often. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives, so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. That's the goal. And I am so grateful for this opportunity every week to commune with you and my wonderful guests. As we get started today, I want to invite you to take a moment to learn about our sponsor for the show, which is at advancedlivingcomfort.com, A-D-V-A-N-C-E-D, livingcomfort.com. You will find a small plug-in product that is referred to by many as a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. It looks like a plain digital clock, but when it's plugged in, it's like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It creates a pure, harmonized energy that mitigates the stress of our high-tech electric world, and actually, from what some of the doctors are telling me, raises the healing field of energy. The result, better sleep, more clarity, handling stress better, just a lot of good positive things. Folks like Jack Canfield, Reverend Michael Beckwith, a bunch of doctors like Harvard Medical Doctor Eva Selhub have come to recognize the value, use it, recommend it. So check out advancedlivingcomfort.com. There's some special pricing there too. Oh boy. And now for today. Yes. What about the idea of being happy? We all love that, right? But you say, well, sometimes it can be tricky, right? And that's for sure. Our country was founded on people being able to pursue happiness. It wasn't guaranteed. You had to go after it. And we have a guest today that has taken that pursuit to some extraordinary levels. And he has actually authored a book. You're going to love the title of this. At least I do. The title of the book is called Deep Happy. And you got to be wondering, well, who wrote Deep Happy? Well, I'm so glad you asked. We have a wonderful guest today, Peter Fairfield, who is an acupuncturist, healer, medical intuitive, with more than 40 years of clinical experience, and using many forms of healing, and he's also been out there for a long time as a national speaker lecturer. And his unique skill set came about as a result of long retreats in China and in the Himalayas, studying under the tutelage of Tibetan lamas, yogis, and other spiritually advanced teachers, blending his knowledge of Eastern philosophies with his training in natural forms of healing, Chinese medicine, acupuncture, neuroenergetic physiology, German homeopathy, and other transformational systems. Wow, I mean, you're talking about a beautiful array of things here. He's formulated a highly effective East-West model of psychophysiology that combines the energetic basis of Asian medical and spiritual traditions with modern neurobio and quantum science. And he calls upon his guidance system in his private practice and in his special engagements and, of course, in his new book, Deep Happy, How to Get There and Always Find Your Way Back. Yeah, which is, to me, key. Because, you know, in case we slip now and then, it's not like, oh, darn, I lost it, fell off the wagon. It's like, okay, oops, so what? Always find your way back to that place of deep happy, which we're going to learn about. And, of course, he, with all his wonderful abilities in multiple disciplines, he has been an acupuncturist at the Esalen Institute, founded an acupuncture school, taught acupuncture to the doctor of the King of Bhutan, been a biofeedback therapist at UCLA, presented more than 100 seminars nationally, been the host of his own weekly radio and television program, and currently presents workshops that combine practices from his own research, instant medicine, and the Taoist, Tibetan, Tantric, meditative, and Qigong traditions. Now, he's interestingly, as a gifted healer and teacher, he's found a distinctive role as the natural healer acupuncturist of choice for the stars of the music business. And among the clients he has treated and toured with are some of the world's leading pop, rock, and film figures. So, I mean, this is not just stuffy, right? It's not just, oh my God, let's sit in Om until we fall over happy. This is, the depth of this is amazing. So we want to welcome our wonderful guest today, Peter Fairfield. Hello, Peter.
Well, hi, Ken. Boy, I didn't realize my bio was so long. I'm glad we got done with it before the show was over.
Well, and now as we're wrapping up, no, sorry.
Yeah, right.
Bad joke. Okay. Yes, there is just so, and to me it's wonderful the depth that you bring. I mean, this is not just, okay, some people go out and they have a revelation and they decide they can do everything and they're going to practice on as many people as will show up and let them work on them. And you, I think it's important when we're, especially we're talking about something about this deep happy, that you have put a huge amount of time and personal work, and it's broad spectrum. So getting that in front of people first, to me, I think is important. And now, as I'm wondering in your book, more things are out there about being happy, and especially given we're going through some pretty tough times, would you share what is so different about deep happy?
Well, yeah. You know, we are going through tough times, although it's amazing with the tough times we're going through, even people having a really hard time still have moments in their day that are good. So it's not like every moment of every day is bad. You know, there are moments in the worst of days that are okay, if not even better than okay for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But deep happy is about touching a place inside us that's already happy, no matter how bad the outside seems, because it's a place where the universe connects to us.
Oh.
It's a biological imperative. It's at the core of our being. There is a place that's untouched by the difficulties of the world, and
oh,
it's a place where we also connect to God and the universe. And it's inside all of us. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to get anything. You just have to remember and discover that it's there and begin to uncover it. You can buy deep happy. That's sneak a little advertisement in there.
Okay, so, but so having the book as a resource is okay, too.
Yes. But even without the book, just knowing it's there is sometimes enough for people to find it because it's inside us. You know, if you think back to when you were 6 and 10 and 12 and 15 and 20, there are moments when you were having a good day, when you just seem like yourself, that you don't feel any different. I mean, there's a part of us that seems the same as when we were all those ages. There's a part of us that is the same inside. Yeah, I'm 63, and there's a part of me that still feels like a little kid, and I'm sure my wife would agree with that.
Good.
But,
good.
But that's the non-changing place inside us. And that non-changing place inside us is really the basis of what spirituality is. And that's the place of deep happy. Now,
wow.
You know, I, you know, you were asking, you know, where did this come from? But like many of your listeners, I had a profound experience as a little boy that really, you know, brought me to the rest of all the other stuff that I do and am into and have studied. When I was about 8 or 9, somebody told me that about the concept of infinity. Well, that didn't make sense to me that something could neither begin nor end. And so I became fascinated with that idea. I just couldn't get it.
Yeah.
So even at that little age, I didn't realize how weird this was. I decided that I would try to feel infinity. So I would close my eyes and go to the place, you know, and go inside and try to feel the place that didn't begin or end. And after a few months of trying it sporadically, I got there. One day I just got to that place and went, oh, that's it. Now, many years later, when I was doing a long retreat in the Himalayas, I realized that that had been a bridge, that had brought some experiences from another time and another place over into this life, and that reconnected me to, in a sense, who I had been before. We all have these connections. That's also where deep happy is.
Right. I'm just wondering, Peter, have you shifted in any way? You're holding the phone or where position in the room? I'm picking up a little bit of an echo.
I was getting that too. I started out in here. I went outside for a while. It was a little hot, and I came back in. I don't think the echo's me.
No. Okay. Well, it's okay now. So we'll carry on. Not bad at 9 years old to deeply contemplate infinity, and it to me sets a tone that says you on your life path took some unique steps that would help you, compared to the average person, to reach a place where you could help us to connect with some things that it's not like you're the only one that has them. You're telling us we all have this stuff, but you've taken the time to figure out how to get there.
The only difference between me and anybody else is that I was lucky enough to, or dumb enough to think that I could try to feel it or find it. And everybody has these capacities. Everybody is connected to the universe. Everybody has deep happy. That's the thing. You don't have to be special. It's just like having, you know, the ability to be or think or stand. You know, if you don't have a foot, you can still stand on something. You can still figure it out. You can sit down. So we're like that. We all have this ability.
Yeah.
That's the encouraging thing.
Okay. Well, this is helpful. So now that we are becoming aware of an, I don't know if you'd call it an innate or inherent happiness,
yes,
that transcends our external situation. Does that mean we have to be happy all the time?
No. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
The week that I sent off the manuscript to Wiser Books on Deep Happy, I got a letter from the IRS saying that I owed them $78,000.
Hmm.
And I didn't. And I knew I didn't. But so part of me, was the inside core of me was fine. I could also watch the outside core of me, you know, respond to this outer intense stimulus. And so, you know, we can realize that things are okay and feel that okay place inside us while we're experiencing the difficulties of our life. You know, it's like having a warm coat on and going outside on a cold day, or it's like having a raincoat on when it rains. On the inside, we're dry and warm and happy, and the outside, we're kind of dealing with the stuff of the world. So it's like we're okay inside, and we're experiencing the complexities of reality on the outside. Mm. And that's what makes it okay.
Wow. Wow, to me that's so very important. And then I guess just to know, you know, because people would think, okay, well, you know, Peter's doing okay, may have had a little problem here or there, but other people are doing a little bit better. And now you're helping us to know that this place of deep happy has nothing to do at all with our external circumstance, which means it's available to everyone, right?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, when our sometimes our life and karma will conspire to have difficulties because we're disconnected in some way from our inner reality. You know, we think that difficulties are bad, or like aching pain in our body or illness is bad, but often the difficulties and challenges of our body and our life are what drives us into a greater awareness inside, to find the greater depth of who we are, to find the greater depth of, you know, of our connection to the universe. In Deep Happy, I have a chapter on karma. And basically I say that, you know, the universe loves us. It's not a universe of punishment or blame. It's a universe that loves us so much that a minor difficulty like stubbing our toe or even losing our body is nothing compared to the importance of reconnecting us to the universe and the resonance of all life. And so when we understand that what happens to us, even the difficult things, the very difficult things, are a blessing, and we begin to find the wisdom in the blessing, we begin to understand what the benefit of it is, even in very difficult situations, then we begin to realize how loved we are by our universe, and how cared for we are, and how big a perspective we all live in.
Wow. That is fabulous. Now, just so, because sometimes when people listen in, they want to do further looking. They're listening. They're looking at different websites. Could you refer us to a place where we can learn more about you, Deep Happy, as we continue talking?
Sure. Well, the website is deephappylife.com.
And
deephappylife.com.
L-I-V-E-S, lives?
Yes. Yes. Deephappylife.com.
Oh, or single, L-I-F-E.
It's just L-I-F-E.
Okay, deephappylife.com. Thank you for helping me to clarify.
And there's also another one called peterfairfield.com, and I am on YouTube. There's a number of videos. And I realize that this show is in the Bay Area, and my wife and I have a clinic in Mill Valley, California, called the Center for Health and Happiness.
Oh, wow.
And so you can get my phone number and our email off the websites. I work with people locally, and also about half my work is doing phone work with people all over the country.
Oh.
We guide them into their own body and open up all the places that have sort of habitual patterns and kind of free them up.
Okay, and the clinic, again, is the center for what?
The Center for Health and Happiness.
Oh, wow.
In Mill Valley, California. But if they go to deephappylife.com or peterfairfield.com, all that information is there.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. I am also wondering, you write about the heart in your work. Are you talking about the physical heart?
Well, it's interesting. You know, there are many octaves of the heart. Embryologically, the heart drops down from the top of the head, actually the crown chakra, right in the area of the anterior cingulate gyrus, and drops down into the chest. And it's interesting. One of the jobs of the anterior cingulate gyrus, which is right at the top of the brain, is to find a reality big enough to hold opposing viewpoints. So when we talk about having a higher view, or the view of the heart, we're actually utilizing neurological function and brain function in that process. So when we talk about the heart, the physical heart itself is much more than just a pump. As a matter of fact, a lot of research done by HeartMath and some of the Asian medical systems has shown that the heart really is in some ways more important than the brain. For instance, the heart has an electrical field 5,000 times greater than the brain. But the heart also creates resonance in the body. You know, the brain has two kinds of cells. It has wires, they're called neurons, and it has glia. And glia create an electromagnetic field. So you have the field and then you have the wire. But a great percentage of the heart cells are also glial cells in that they have electromagnetic resonance. And depending upon the tone of our life and of our love and our compassion and how connected we are to intimacy and humanity, the heart radiates that as an electromagnetic field out from the body. And also, because of the heart embryologically comes down from the top of the head, there are little connections from the heart up to the crown chakra and up to the higher dimensions. And as we tune into higher guidance and higher connection to the higher realms, what happens is we bring that energy down into our heart, and there are two little electrical systems in the heart, two little nodes, the AV node and the SA node, that stimulate the different parts of the heart to pump and function. But in the vibe, in the feel of that electrical stimulation, can also imprint on the blood, almost homeopathically, the vibration of our soul essence, of our soul wisdom and our spirituality. So as we tune into the heart and we express our heart into the world, we're also bringing the higher frequencies into the world itself. So living from the heart is also expressing spirit into the world in very clear terms of physiology. Now, there are other shells and other levels in the electrical fields of the heart, in the chakra system, the energetic system, and so forth. But even the physical heart is a very esoteric organ.
Wow. This is quite interesting, because I was, as you were talking and imagining a flow of blood, for some reason, the image that flashed in my mind was large numbers of people, especially in California, but all over the country now, that go through drive-through restaurants in their cars. And they're driving through, and as they stop at the window, something is given to them, and they keep moving. And I thought to myself, wow, you're describing to me this, that the blood going through is not just being pumped by the heart, but is actually receiving something as it's moving through the heart, right?
That's right. But the electromagnetic resonance of the heart is not just for the blood. It also, the whole body listens to the tone and the feel of the resonance of the heart.
Mm.
So in a certain way, the heart governs the whole body in some ways as much or even more than the brain. It's very interesting when you begin to look at it. And this is by Western research. If you want to look at it, there's a company, an organization down near Santa Cruz called HeartMath. It's pretty well known. H-E-R-T and M-A-T-H. If you go to their website, HeartMath, they have lots of monographs and all this very interesting research on the heart that mimics the teachings of the Asian systems.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. I love that. Now, to me, this begins to tie in a little bit. When you say in your work that living from the heart is the only safe strategy. So I'm wondering if you'd expound on that a bit, please.
Sure, because, you know, we think, well, you know, to have our heart open, to live from our heart, all of a sudden we start to feel, you know, we start to feel vulnerable, like we're Bambi in the headlights or something. But the truth is, in Chinese medicine, we look at the defensive strategies, how the body defends itself and keeps alert and stays in reference to the world, because different organs actually have different defensive styles. The liver, for instance, the style of the liver defends itself with hyperactivity and density and tightness. The spleen, for instance, protects itself with sort of evasion or seeing things differently, and then, you know, being a little off track. All the organs have something like that. The heart protects itself with openness. But what makes openness safe is as we develop the courage to really see the truth. Not only is the world open to us, not only are we open to the world, but now the world is open to us. We can really see the deep, the depth, and the truth of everything. So that's what's really important about it.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. to me, as you're saying some of this, I'm verging on in your work and phrase this for you biblically. For instance, Christ made mention of when you're confronted, turn the other cheek, and then another part of that, love your enemy. I mean, things that on the surface make absolutely zero sense. I mean, like, get rid of him. He was probably having a bad day. Maybe they used the wrong oils when they anointed him that morning. I don't know. but now you're beginning to talk about something. Could you tie those together?
You know, forgiveness is also about us, but it's also about the other person. Now, if we think of this place of deep happy that we all have, the deep happy or our inner nature or our Buddha nature or Christ consciousness, our inner core or being that we connect the universe with, whatever you want to call it, is intrinsic to everybody. But due to trauma, due to aberrant trainings or experiences that are emotionally and physical traumatic, due to problems of birth and all kinds of things, and social experiences, people get shut down and disconnected from who they are, from their essence. And they begin to struggle with aggression to survive, and they begin to struggle with emotional distance, and they begin to struggle by not being able to connect to themselves or humanity. And in that process, very antisocial, very difficult things come up, very selfish things, very hard things come up. And so when somebody is doing terrible things to us or bad things to us or selfish things to us, we have to realize that inside them is a Buddha nature or a deep happy. And if we remember that they have that inside but they're disconnected from outside, it does not mean that we have to allow them to do anything negative to us or to repeat this. Quite the opposite. But as we remember that they have this sacred place inside them and see them as a being that has a sacred place but a lot of wounds, a lot of difficulties outside, that's the truth of them. The truth of them is not they're not a bad person, but they're a person that's wounded or has so many difficulties that they can't express that sacredness. They can only express their hurt. So we forgive them because they are traumatized and wounded individuals. We don't necessarily forgive their actions. And so that's a very different thing, because if I keep my attention on someone's inner being, then at some point that helps them at a very unconscious place to begin to remember that they may have that too. If I don't hate somebody for their actions, but I dislike their actions and still care for them as a being, that's a very different message to someone that has wounded us or done something negative to us. Now, it's not always easy to do, but what, you know, if retribution does not solve anything, blame does not solve anything, understanding the clarity of action and reaction is what solves the problem. And so we don't want to get back at someone. That doesn't do anything. What we want to do is create a situation where the person sees and understands what they've done, the problems it created, and how it's hurt them is more than anything. Now that may not necessarily undo whatever they've done to me, but the whole idea is to wake up the world, not necessarily to get back at people that have unconsciously hurt us. Mm. So that's how being in the heart, and that's how forgiving people is so important. When we hold blame, when we hold anger, when we hold rage, when we hold disassociation with anybody that has we feel has wronged us, we ourselves are stuck in that place. We cannot move on, because the truth is never that they have wronged us. The truth is, because they are damaged or wounded or hurt, they were unable to see the clarity of what their actions caused. And again, it does not mean we have to let anybody hit us or hurt us or do anything like that. Quite the opposite. We need to protect ourselves and be very clear. But to solve the problem from a bigger way, we need to understand the people's abilities, what they can do and what they can't do. And that comes from an openness in the heart.
Mm. Wow. Okay. So in your work, this is exciting. You talk about feeling into the heart, living from the heart. And so can you help a little bit more? I don't know if there's practical examples or stuff from your life or people that you've worked with that you can use to help us relate to how when we've been hurt and then we have to deal with that person, how we can get back into this place of feeling into the heart.
Well, you know, the heart is a physical location. So by simply breathing into the heart and breathing into that place in the chest, we can begin to notice what we feel. Now, often what we might feel is nothing. We might breathe into the chest and feel nothing. Well, that means it's been kind of turned off for a long time. There's a very different, you know, a lot of us have not really experienced unconditional love. In my work with individuals using Chinese pulse diagnosis and my own pattern recognition of helping people understand where they come from, I look at the patterns of their parents and the patterns that they grew up with. Now, these things become imprinted in the nervous system in the body and can fairly easily be done. That's a lot of the work I do with people at my clinic and also on the phone with people. But these patterns are what imprints on us. And so one of those patterns is not feeling the heart. I was working with a gentleman the other day, and I said, you know, your father was busy, and he was kind of in his own world. And he said in this voice, oh, my dad loved me. But you can tell by the cerebralness of that vocal sound when he talked about the father, the love from his father, it wasn't my dad loved me.
Yes, there wasn't feeling in it.
You didn't hear his heart when he said that. And there's a very difference between head love and heart love. And so as we begin to feel the physical location in our chest, begin to breathe in there, sometimes we breathe in there, we can't feel anything. Sometimes it feels numb. Sometimes it feels achy. Sometimes it feels sharp. And then as we allow ourselves to put our consciousness and begin to experience what we can actually feel in the physical chest, gradually the no feeling changes, and gradually more and more feeling comes. Sometimes I suggest to people that they imagine that they have a cute little kitten just held right to their heart. And you feel the softness and the warmth and the purring and the innocence. And it's that kind of tenderness that begins to melt the lack of physical sensation in the physical heart.
Oh.
And then pretty soon, if the heart melts, the actual organ of the heart can begin to radiate what we call love and compassion and understanding.
Wow. Okay, so if I'm hearing correctly, because this sounds like an opportunity for what I would consider possibly a deep, happy moment. From my training previously, it's like, okay, you gave an example of a sweet purring kitty held to the chest, and of course my invitation. Some people might like that. For others, it may be a puppy. For some, I don't know. It's like, folks, find something that is just so tender and so beautiful and so warm to you that you'd want to not just hold it close to you, you'd like to feel it just melting into you and becoming one with it, because there is so much love and joy. And I'm guessing, Peter, is that kind of like some of the essence of what you're talking about?
Yes. It's beginning to feel the softness and the intimacy.
Oh, wow.
Because intimacy really comes from the heart, and it's terrifying. You know, we think we all want somebody really close, but sometimes when we have a new relationship and we let them in really close, it's terrifying. We push them away or they push us away. And it's not that we're bad or they're bad. It's just that it's scary. We're not used to having somebody being that close, even though we want it. And so
wow.
Can I ask
you something important, I think, or at least for me?
Sure.
As people are dealing, I know for myself personally, I could improve some of my intimacy skills, and I think given the divorce rate, given what I had read, that of the marriages that stay within 10 years, less than 1 in 10 of the people are actually happy. They're all still married. So all this kind of stuff says to me there's a lot of room for improvement in happiness and intimacy, and I'm thrilled for what you're bringing to us. This is just exquisite. I guess I'm wondering, in the pathway, with especially the metaphor, I love kitties, I love puppies, whole lots of things I'd like, just beautifully. But what I'm wondering is, can we do ourselves good if we're not dealing well with some other people in our lives, to be taking time with these imagined beautiful pets or creatures, or imagine people, and just taking time to bring that feeling to ourselves, even if we're not with anyone else.
Yeah, but you know, we're never alone. We are always held within the loving arms of our universe.
Oh.
It's easy, you know, when we limit our perception to time and space, we begin to feel how small we are and how far away everything is, and we don't often feel the connection. But as soon as you realize that time and space are the illusions of reality, and You know, since I work with people as a physician for 40 years, you know, I think in terms of the body a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there are over 100 trillion cells in the body. And each of those cells can express its need for oxygen, nutrition, getting away toxins, revitalization, many things. It does it through broadcasting its need electromagnetically. And as we experience ourselves in connection to the great living universe and make it okay for ourselves to have nourishment, to make it okay for ourselves to have abundance, to make it okay for ourselves to have connection and love, then the universe hears that and responds. Now, if another part of us is going, well, I don't deserve that, I don't want that, I'm not good with that, I don't want to feel that, the universe also hears that too. So one of the things that we work a lot with people in Deep Happy is beginning to be a little bit selfish in a healthy way. That it's okay to nourish yourself. It's okay to have things. It's okay to feel things. It's okay to give to yourself. Not at the expense of others. I mean, obviously you don't want to go snap food out of some kid's hand. But
okay.
Don't go to nursery school and steal lunches. That's not what I'm talking about. But it's okay to give to ourselves. It's okay to appreciate ourselves. It's okay to love ourselves.
Sure.
And in doing that, and as we fill ourselves up, then what happens, the next step is a natural compassion, a natural outpouring of caring for others, because we don't need the energy ourselves anymore because we've let ourselves heal and become filled up. And so it's a very beautiful process. And so when you feel alone, when you start to feel like you're shut off or you don't have things that you want, let yourself feel those physical sensations in the body. Because as you do that, then the places where we hold tight begin to open. Because everything we think is the emotions are really in the body. Our feelings are in the body, not our head.
Okay, so we're kind of talking a little bit of the distinction between emotions and feelings and noticing things.
Yes, I mean this is an important thing. Emotions, I mean, anybody can call anything, but the way I look at it is emotions are the specific sensory states, like anger, sadness, fear, and so forth. Those are very specific. And in the Asian medical system, there are particular organs that are related to those different emotional states. Love and awareness has to do with the heart, and anger and well-being has to do with the liver, and grief and sadness and sort of a certain kind of courage comes from the lung and so forth. But there's also this felt sense that's not necessarily about emotions, but it's a tactile sense of how things are going and what's going on and where things are. Like you can feel somebody walk into a room that's not in a good mood. You can feel that his vibration or her vibration is different. You can feel that things are going to work out. You have a sense that it's, if you just keep going, that it's going to turn out like you want. You can have a sense that you're going to find something, or you can have a sense that this idea or even this restaurant, to be very specific, is not really where you want to eat. So that's a felt sense. That's kind of where intuition and the body's perception, both in time and space and out of time and space, communicate to us. So the felt sense and the emotional sense are somewhat different, although they're both physically oriented.
Ah, wow. And then you brought up intuition, and part of your work, is, of course, with all the years of studies, is a medical intuitive, and I'm just wondering, what can we do to help develop our intuition more powerfully?
Well, we can begin to become curious about it. We can begin to experiment with it enough so we can trust it. You know, one experiment that you can do that I've been starting to teach in my workshops, because it's something I found that I could do. When somebody mentions a name of a friend of theirs, just imagine that in that name comes a whole channel of information, which it does. When somebody mentions the name of somebody, you can really get all kinds of information about that person, who they are, what their personality is like, sometimes things that are going on in their bodies, sometimes things that's going on in their life. Because when we say the name of someone, all that we know about that person, and often things we don't know about the person, are carried within that vibration of their name. So you can just go back on that column of sound and just ask yourself, what do I know about this person? And if we get hunches and things, you know, there's There are certain kinds of thought processes that come from the head. Oh, I need this, or this is going to be good. I really need 18 more guitars, or you know, whatever. That has a certain feeling to it.
Yeah.
But when we're really getting guidance, we're really getting clarity, it has a different kind of feel. It seems to come from the top of the head, or it comes from the heart. It's a very different feel. So using our emotional and our felt sense, like we just talked about, we can begin to notice where the difference between one kind of thought, the thought that's true guidance and wisdom, and another kind of thought that's just sort of neurotic rambling. And as soon as we begin to get the feeling, the difference of these two kinds, then we can begin to get a sense of really fine-tuning our intuition and really fine-tuning what our inner perception is telling us. I have quite a few stories in Deep Happy about listening to the universe and being guided to different places.
Mm.
And there's also, almost every chapter has different practices that you can do.
Oh, boy, that'll be helpful, because for myself and so many of us, we're having a pathway to get there, because, I mean, you've done 40-plus years of work, probably starting back in early childhood, if not before then. So this is exciting that you're now bringing this to us in this book, Deep Happy, and making things available, trainings, personal consultations. Wow. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And, we are going to be doing trainings and workshops in the Bay Area and all over the country. We just set one up in Seattle for the end of October today, and we'll be doing probably a couple this fall in the Bay Area. We'll be doing them on the East Coast and Albuquerque and around Phoenix area and so forth. So if anybody listening is interested in coming to a workshop, they can get on our mailing list at deephappylife.com. Now, you know, it's not just about being happy, but sometimes people are depressed or anxious, or they feel disconnected, or their life feels like it's not going where they want to, or they just, something's wrong with their relationship, they just feel out of sync, or they just, they're not even sure what's going on, but they just don't quite feel like themselves. Well, these are the kind of things that the process of Deep Happy and also the work I do with individuals really, really does. We work with a lot of kids, teenagers, for instance, or younger kids have behavior problems or learning difficulties, and so we use the process of Deep Happy and other things when we work with individuals.
Mm. Wow. This is excellent. I love it. Now, I'm just kind of curious, because we've made reference to this long and beautiful process of blending the best of both the East philosophies and trainings and the Western knowledge and information. How did you get to this place, and can you share a little bit of what might have been some of your most extraordinary experiences along the way?
Well, you know, I always wanted to know about the emotions. I was very unhappy. I had a lot of depression, my own self, when I was a kid, and into my teens. And so I wanted to understand that. I saw that a lot of people had feelings and stuff. So I was always interested in spiritual things. And so trying to find those answers really is what led me along the way. I started to study meditation when I was about 18. And different spiritual practices and different spiritual communities. And after I became an acupuncturist, when I was about 35, I was led in a very mystical way to meet my teacher, who was a Tibetan Lama in Nepal. And I practiced in Nepal for about 7 years. I had a clinic in a Tibetan Buddhist town over there called Bodhanath. And as a population of clients, I treated most of the high Nyingma and Kagyu Lamas in the world, which was an incredible blessing. Mm. And eventually I began to discover this quality in the pulse. In Chinese medicine, we do pulse diagnosis. We feel the wrist, not just to feel how fast the heart is, but we can also get information on how the organs are functioning, emotional patterns, parental patterns, all kinds of things. And I began to discover there was a quality in the pulse I didn't quite understand. And it was, some of the lamas had it, not all of it. Even some of the Westerners that were there to practice and study had it. And I didn't quite get it. I couldn't quite think about it. And after noticing this for 7 or 8 years, I was back in the States, and this very high teacher came to teach in San Francisco. And I went to visit him about a week later, where he was staying in Oakland, and he gave me this blessing to put his hand on my head, and just it felt like hot water just streaming through my body. And I was in an altered state. And I said, "Thanks. What can I do for you?" And he said, "Well, here, take my pulse." And when I took his pulse, probably due to the altered state I was in, I understood this quality that I had felt in the pulse. And it was the quality of enlightenment. It was the quality of infinity. It was the quality of space. And I realized that all the things that I had thought of as disease and the difficulties that I'd worked with as an alternative physician were really how we just cover over this place of our own deep happy, this place of our infinite being. And so from that moment, it really changed on how I understood health and disease and transformation, the spiritual teachings that from many disciplines that I had read and studied and practiced in retreat. And so that was really a defining moment, among a lot of defining moments, that really let me see that what we want to do is not necessarily get rid of someone's cold. We want to really understand how someone's cold and flu is actually guiding them to take time off, to be still and wise, and how much of what we call disease is really the intelligence of the body trying to accomplish something. And so that really changed how I work with people and how I practice with people. And, well, it's still an ongoing practice. I'm always trying to understand things more deeply. I'm always trying to integrate a bigger view of physiology or humanity. I'm always looking at every client that I see every day. I'm trying to learn something from to make sure there isn't some way I can understand things more clearly or with a bigger view. And so it's a very organic process. And most of the stuff I know I've learned from my clients and my students.
Wow, that's beautiful. I love the humility of that it's not about you, the magical one, bestowing upon us poor, hurting folks something. It's all of us as children on the playground of God's creation, learning with and from each other. That's a sweet, sweet place to be, Peter.
Well, it's we're all there in a way. We just have to notice it.
that it.
I have as many impurities and inabilities as anybody, and somehow I've managed to do it, so it should be easy for everybody else.
Well, it's certainly nice to know that with some encouragement, and to me, the thing that I so love is I get a sense of your determination that the process that, whatever, 40 years, 50 years, I mean, 40 years formal training, from beyond that, that in Deep Happy, you wouldn't be trying to sneak in some shortcuts on us, would you?
Well, you know, it's all shortcuts. The main shortcut is just remembering that we're all connected to the same infinite universe. And that very little of us is our body and personality, and most of us is this great connection to infinity. That's the big shortcut.
Right.
There are lots of practices and processes in Deep Happy to be more specific about, you know, working through all of this. But it's a very practical book, although you can just read it for the stories and what I talk about. But if anybody is interested, then there are practices to do, and also we have workshops and working with people individually too. So however anybody wants help or assistance in accomplishing something and finding their own place of deep happy, that's what we're geared for.
Oh, that's fabulous. I'm wondering, there's a reference in your work about happiness on three levels, and I know I feel great if I can just feel a little happy and didn't even know I was going, had three levels available to me. Could you help us there too?
Well, yeah, you know there's a basic happiness of, you know, of just being, finding contentment in ourselves, finding contentment with the basic stuff of the world. And then there's a broader happiness when it comes to really feeling and understanding our connection to others. And also helping others when we can. And, you know, just sort of noticing who and how the universe brings us situations and people that we can interact with. And then there's the higher level, or not a higher, but it's a bigger level of happiness, where we really feel and live with our connection to the world, I mean, to the universe, where we really feel that we are a living part of the infinite, that, you know, the universe is not just some big space out there that's disconnected to us, but yet that distance itself is a representation of how big we are, and that we're just part of it, just like cells in a body. We are cells in the universe. And so somewhere in Deep Happy, I say that if you're not happy, it's because your perspective is too small. In other words, if I have a tack in my foot and all I can feel is my foot in the tack, it's a really bad day. But if I actually feel my whole body in the tack, well, I still have to take the tack off, still might hurt a little bit, but it's not quite so serious. If I feel my whole life, you know, if I look outside me and around and I see all that's going on, then the tack, you know, it's still something I have to take out, but it's not that bad. And then if I feel the whole universe and me, the tack becomes very minor, even though it's still handy to reach down and pull it out of my damn foot.
Still worth doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you're mentioning that, for people that have heard of or been through Lamaze childbirth, I think it works on a theory similar to what you're talking about. When I went through that training, and participated with my wife, there was like a visual distraction to look at something, a mantra or a saying to repeat, and then another distraction with the breathing to keep a person so busy with the three things that even though a contraction normally might turn into a severe pain, there was a feeling, but it wasn't severe pain.
Well, actually, if we go the other direction, too, if you actually, you know, the word pain is actually a fairly nebulous word, although everybody uses it.
Yeah.
But so if we actually go into wherever the contraction is or the spasm is or the sensation is, and we begin to breathe into it and actually experience it, what happens is what we call pain almost always diminishes to being some sort of sensational experience of sensation. Mm. And one of the processes of Deep Happy and also how I work with people on the phone is taking them in the beginning to re-experience their body from the term of sensations, because as consciousness and the breath touch various places in the body wakes up and becomes healed again.
Wow. Ah, that's excellent. I love that. Oh, my gosh. We have got about a minute left. I'm just wondering if you'd like to share anything that you feel is, you know, important as a wrap-up, because it's just been so great.
Well, yeah. But people just have to realize that their essence, they're really okay. No matter how bad things seem, from the big picture, it's not that terrible. And, you know, even if it seems really bad, inside you, you're still connected to the universe. And then if you want some help, there's lots of places out there, and my version of help can be found at deephappylife.com. My phone number is 415-377-0862. And the deephappylife.com or peterfairfield.com have all that. But trust that the universe can bring you peace and healing, and not just from me, but from all over the place. And so don't give up. Let yourself have that, and things will be good.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Peter Fairfield. I am so grateful for you taking time to be with us today.
I'm grateful to be on your show, too. Thanks again.
You're welcome. And to you, Peter, to my beloved listeners, until we meet again, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let go.